Need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you, no fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web. And now, here she is, Dr. Susan Block.
Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, artists and exhibitionists, voyeurs and connoisseurs, all you children of sex, and we are all children of sex, with a capital X. Can I get an amen?
Amen. Amen.
Can I get an A, women?
A, women!
It's my 8th bedside chat of the coronapocalypse, broadcasting live from the little love church of the Bonobo Way in the village of Bonoboville. In isolation. And yes, my bedside chats are inspired by our great President FDR's fireside chats. He wasn't perfect, but at least he knew how to talk America through a crisis. So, here we are. Masked, quarantined, isolated. Yeah, seriously. Many people are hurting and grieving and lonely and bored and scared. I'm very confused. While some people are going forth without their masks and with their guns because they don't need protection against the coronavirus, but they do need protection against, I don't know, but they do. They gotta have those guns and rocket launchers. Yes, indeed, brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners. There's a guy with a rocket launcher, like getting ice cream somewhere. Anyway. Oh, as our president, we put a mask on him. He won't stay masked, spewing hate and bigotry and misinformation. And touring a mask factory without his mask. Even without his mask, we keep him under gag order here in Bonoboville. And of course, showing his small penis syndrome, weren't you? Yelling at a female reporter. Actually, several female reporters. I mean, your little dick can't be more obvious than when you yell at these female reporters. So silly. Yeah, put your mask back on. The only thing big about you is the death count. Yes, indeed. But hey, Hey. It's still the Merry Masturbation Month of May. Woohoo! And
the best. So we're supposed to save it all for May?
No. Come on, we had this talk last time, Sunshine. You can masturbate any month, any day, any hour, any time, especially in isolation. The best, safest sex is that's the best, safest sex for isolation. And certainly, when you're in isolation, I mean, if you've got someone that you're sure about, okay, but otherwise, Jack a Jill and off, baby. But, you know, you can do it anytime, anywhere. Masturbation Month is kind of like Women's History Month, Black History Month, Kink Month, you know, where you talk about it, where you honor it, you know, and use props on your show. But, yeah, of course, do it whenever you want to do it. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, if you want to testify that you masturbate, and you are not ashamed, well, you just call the Little Love Church of the Bonobo Way, and we will hear you. Our phone number is 1-626-461-5212. And we will talk to you. But you know, jackin' or jillin' is more thrilling when you fantasize. Yeah. When you turn on, as you tune in to the erotic theater of the mind. Yes, indeed, brothers and sisters, this is not the biggest sex organ. What's that? You know the biggest sex organ of the body?
I don't know. I don't have it.
The skin.
Okay.
It's all over you. And that is a very sensitive sex organ. But we're not supposed to touch each other's skin. Well, you can touch your own skin when you masturbate, but you're not supposed to touch other people unless you're like fluid bonded, spit bonded or something. But yeah, that's the biggest, but I would say the most powerful, and certainly in isolation, the key sex organ is the mind. So, yes, the erotic theater of the mind is what we deal with like all the time on this show and the Dr. Susan Block Institute. Yeah, I love theater. Been doing it, you know, since I've been doing. maybe not as long as I've been masturbating. You know, no, I wasn't masturbating with the Hitachi magic wand when I was a little child, but I was masturbating. And then shortly thereafter started doing theater. And yeah, I guess I'm still doing both. And tonight, we are exploring immersive theater. Yes, indeed. It's a special kind of role play and kind of related to LARP. You know, live action role play, except, you're alive and you might be engaged in action, but you're just, you know, in your own little place and you're not like running through the woods together or in a house where everybody is doing different things or in a theater where, you know, you could have the other form of immersive theater. Audience participation, you know. Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage. And I don't remember the rest. But for adults as well as children, fantasy is often preferable to reality, no doubt. So, it could be erotic fantasy, right? We like that. But it could also be kind of PG enough for Disney, right? And there's all different levels. Your fantasy can be as well contained as you are right now. Speaking of containment, I'm trying to contain my bra. Okay. But Harry, you're standing right in front of where I can see how it looks. I can't see it. Yeah. I gotta contain it here.
Nice.
Yeah.
Choo-choo.
Yeah, well, you know. But now it's moved. Now I can't see it at all. Okay. So there we go. That's even. Now let's make it stay that way. Yes. So, in your own little self-contained universe, you can make all the rules. And anything is possible. Nothing is forbidden. At least in my self-contained universe. I mean, when you're sharing self-contained universes, you know, exchanging fantasies, there could be things that are forbidden. But in your own, it's anything goes that you want. And, radio people call it the theater of the mind. You've heard that phrase before. And if it involves sex or kink, I call it the erotic theater of the mind. And yes, theater can be therapeutic. About a century ago, Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld purchased a villa that became his institute in Weimar, Berlin, which was very liberal, kind of like San Francisco of Germany, and it housed his immense sex library that was later burned by the Nazis. Those film reels you see of Nazis burning books, they're burning sex books, and it's from the Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld Library. And he provided educational services, medical consultations, and featured theatrical presentations on various fetishes and fantasies and orientations. And they were attended by all kinds of people, his patients, as well as students and other faculty and artists like Christopher Isherwood, who wrote I Am a Camera, which was the basis of Cabaret, and W.H. Auden, the great British-American poet. And then there were such venerated theater therapy techniques as psychodrama, based on Dr. Jacob Moreno's Theater of Spontaneity, Dr. Fritz Perl's Gestalt Therapy, very theatrical, Jungian archetypal dramatization, and Dr. Marshall Rosenberg's system of nonviolent communication. Very bonobo, peace through pleasure. And Michel Foucault, of course, Science of Sexuality, as well as the famous Aristotelian view of theater, which is that theater is not just a form of entertainment. It's, or it should be, a means to understanding the problems in life, whether these are sex problems, your sex problems, or, you know, other problems. Political problems, religious problems, cultural problems, human problems. And, it's very old. Theater is therapy, really. Ancient Greek tragedies and comedies. Not to mention their very theatrical Olympics and other athletic contests. They were filled with sex and love and romance and fantasy and desire. And you can, you know, still enjoy all that stuff with Greek mythology. That in some ways is better than porn, at least for the erotic theater of the mind. I mean, it's so old, you could even say the first human fertility dances were some form of erotic theater therapy. And they were certainly immersive theater, because you definitely have audience participation. You don't just have the dancers dancing and the audience just sitting there like this. No, the audience is involved, at least in a call and response kind of way. Or maybe more. Maybe an audience member is brought up to be deified and hopefully not sacrificed. But yeah, that happened too a little later. So we're going to talk more about all kinds of immersive theater therapy here on my bedside chat of the Coronapocalypse. So cuddle up to your computer screen now and immerse yourself. Ooh, and there's sunshine. And maybe we could get, well, what do we have here? Oh, someone said more tatty, Susan?
I was hoping you would understand that.
Well, he probably means titty, I would think. More tatty. And since I'm just fooling around with my bra a lot, that sort of thing, I would guess he means titty, but maybe he's from, Belgium or something, and he says tatty. So,
or he could be typing too fast, right? When you're right. So excited, you type so fast.
Right, okay. Well, anyway. So more titty. Here's more titty. And no nipple, because Marky Z can't handle that. Tom on live to, someone's on the phone. Okay. So, Tom, are you there?
Yes.
Tom, welcome to my bedside chat.
Tom,
what did you want to talk with me about?
I had a question.
Yes.
Oh, I wanted to know why a man might like to watch his wife with other men.
Because the cuckold fetish is one of the most popular, common fetishes there is, really. I think whenever a man watches regular porn, which is between a woman he desires and a man who's got her, he's basically being cuckolded. And I have this whole theory of the biological nature of it, which is the sperm wars theory, which you can... It's kind of the idea that there's another man, that there's sperm from another team that could get into your woman, wife, girlfriend.
Right, which drives you to...
Drives your sperm to come up in your shaft, and it sends a message. Speaking of the brain, we're talking about the brain as being, you know, the most powerful sexual organ. So when you perceive whether you're correct or not, and whether you're jealous or not, whether you're happy about it or not, your brain sends a message to your testicles that says, there's another team on the football field.
Mucho envidia.
We got to make more sperm now.
Competition.
Right.
Okay, so just because I was really tender, I guess you could say.
Just because you were really what?
Like I was really turned on by it, but
turned on.
Afterwards, I didn't feel great about it.
Right. Well, that's because our society basically denigrates any form of mixing and matching. You know, you're supposed to all be monogamous. You're supposed to be faithful. So you feel bad about it. And I'm here to tell you that you shouldn't feel bad about it. I'm here to tell you that maybe you shouldn't tell everybody about it, just because everybody is not going to be as cool as me and understanding and sunshine. But, you know, you shouldn't feel bad about it, unless you enjoy feeling bad and want a spanking. Then go ahead and feel bad. But, you know, all things being equal, you really shouldn't feel bad about it because it's incredibly common and lots of guys feel it. But don't let your bad feelings overtake your good feelings. And if that starts to happen, then you really should stop.
Okay, so what? So we acted on it, right?
Yeah.
So what if we have, like, feelings about it afterwards? What do we do about that?
You have feelings. You mean negative feelings?
Yeah.
You should talk to somebody, maybe each other. You should talk to each other, but maybe you need to talk to somebody else first to sort out your feelings. Because I wouldn't want you to blame her, especially if the two of you decided to do this together. You want to try cuckolding. It's exciting. You know, you're ready for it. And then, oh, lo and behold, it happens.
It wasn't about humiliation for me, if somebody knew that.
Right.
It was more so about...
You notice we haven't even spoken of humiliation as something...
I associate those two terms together. Am I wrong?
You did what?
I associate those two terms together.
Cuckolding and humiliation.
Is there any...
Yes.
Well, there's your problem right there, or one problem. Is, yes, there's a lot of porn that couples humiliation and cuckolding. But let me just say that most cuckolding that goes on in the world in real life, not in porn, in real life, and it does go on a lot in real life, it does not involve humiliation. I'm not saying it doesn't sometimes, but usually it just involves, I guess you could say, sharing. It's very bonobo. You're sharing and you're increasing your sperm count. Hey. And you're letting, you're opening up your, it is great. And you're opening up your relationship. And hey, it's got its downside. First of all, right now, while people are quarantining, it's not the greatest thing to do. But if everybody's healthy and it's okay, then it's a great thing to do. It's sharing. It's spicing up your relationship. And let me just say, it's not for everybody to do in real life, even though I say and I stand by it that it's one of the most common fantasies and interests. Still, it might not be for everybody to do because some people get jealous, some people get angry, some people get insecure and crazy. And so, you know, sometimes you got to pull the brakes on your passion.
Can I kind of explain the situation to you?
Okay.
Okay, so it was me, my significant other, another girl, and three other guys.
How many guys?
And it was only three other guys.
Three other guys, okay.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be just the two girls together on the bed.
Ah.
That was the agreement. And it just turned into something else.
Yeah, turned into a bit of an orgy, or?
Yeah.
Some of the guys? How many guys got involved?
All three, and you know, of course,
okay.
Me too.
So it was an orgy.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with a nice orgy. Unless there is, in which case, hey, maybe it wasn't the greatest thing to do. You know, a lot of people say spontaneity is the spice of sex, and it can be, but sometimes better to plan these things. You know, you guys just went off and did this, probably fueled by a little bit of alcohol or wonderful weed or I don't know. But in any case,
alcohol.
I'm not disapproving of any of that. But then, you know, after y'all come and, you know, the drugs wear off and you kind of start thinking about what mom and dad and, you know, your church or whatever might think about this. And then you feel bad. I mean, you shouldn't feel bad. I say you shouldn't feel bad. But I ain't your minister.
I mean, I didn't.
And I ain't your mama. What?
During. Huh? I didn't feel bad before.
Well, good. Good. Then you were a successful orgiast. It's just
I mean,
you.
It was great at the time.
It sounds like you need some therapy, darling. And I don't have much time to talk you through all of your insecurities on this show. Maybe we can devote a show to you sometime, but this show, I gotta wind it up soon. But I would say either, you know, you just keep calling until you luck out and you tune into a show where my guests aren't available or something, or I mean, some some therapy with the Institute where, you know, you do have to pay for that. But you could probably join some groups online where you can talk about these feelings, because you're not the only one. Like I said, this is very common. Not everybody is as lucky as you that you get to do all of that. You
That's
know?
What a lot of people have said.
Yeah. You just lived a lot of people's fantasy. So count your blessings. But every blessing has a little curse inside.
Dr. Susie, you should go to Bonoboville and start a cuckold group.
Yeah,
I think there is one, actually.
Yeah. We have a cuckold group on bonoboville.com.
Super useful.
And it sounds like somewhat this is about cuckolding, and somewhat this is about just group sex, you know.
Okay.
We have a group sex group, too.
Actually, yeah, you can communicate with people who have done this, and I even go on there, right? So sometimes you can communicate with me for free on bonoboville.com. Okay, darling?
Now I'm sold.
Okay.
All right.
Another satisfied customer. Well, he didn't pay anything, so of course he's sold. But, yeah, you sound like a cool guy. We like you.
Where are you from?
We want you to feel better about yourself.
What part of the world are you in? Where are you from?
I'm from the United States of America. I'm from Michigan.
Michigan. Wow, that's a crazy place these days.
Okay.
But you just stay safe, darling.
Yes.
And,
stay safe.
Yeah, play safe. Also,
play safe. Stay
this
safe.
Is actually a good time during quarantine to enter the erotic theater of the mind and talk about this stuff and imagine scenarios and remind yourself that you're on the forefront of human exploration and that you're normal and yet you're a great sex revolutionary. So, vive la sexual revolution! Okay, Tom, we'll be talking to you later, I think.
Okay.
So, cuckolding, group sex.
All right.
Erotic theater of the mind. Well, in that case, it was reality. His reality became quite the theater scene. But now we're going to talk about a somewhat different kind of theater, I guess. And I'd like to get my guests on the webcam. And so we have Intramersive Theater. Carly Dwyer is right there. Hi. Welcome to Dr. Susie TV. I'm going to take my mask down so nobody can come within 6 feet of me. But yeah, we do practice physical distancing. But socially, we're closer than ever.
And true.
So, how are you? How's your quarantine going?
You know what? It's not as boring as I think other people's. I have an 8-year-old who I am homeschooling, and I'm also running an immersive theater company at night. And yeah,
great.
It's active every day. How's yours?
Well, mine is great. Last week, of course, we did Mother's Day, which we kind of called MILF Day and talked to some moms. But anyway, I'm more interested in talking to you about your theater tonight. Maybe sometime we'll talk about being a mom. But or maybe it's going to enter tonight. But right now, I'd like to know, since you're the director of the Intramersive Theater Group, what is immersive theater?
So that covers a very broad spectrum of kind of theater or live interactive events where the audience does not sit back. Like, there's no proscenium in immersive theater. The audience is very much live with the world, either directly interacting with it or the world is happening around them. Some immersive theater pieces are all about just the audience interacting with space. Other immersive theater events are audiences interacting kind of in a world they can participate in but can't change. We focus on immersive worlds where the audience can participate and can impact the outcome and impact the story and the lives of the characters they interact with in our shows.
Now, when you're talking about your shows now, you're talking about in real life where you're dealing with real human bodies.
Typically, before this, we were exclusively a live action theater company.
Yes.
We would hold, you know, we would take over usually historic homes.
Cool.
And, you know, do kind of historically oriented pieces, talking about the intersections of the supernatural and disenfranchised populations and American cultural history.
And you're in Salem, Massachusetts, aren't you? The home
yes.
of the Salem witch trials.
Yes.
Wow. So have you done anything historical on Salem?
Absolutely. I mean, if you live in a place like this, you don't pass up the opportunity. I mean, you know, you grow up with this history. It's a part of who we are.
Yeah.
And to not dig into that. And also, you know, you grow up with people misunderstanding you and you misunderstanding your world and, you know, your religion and your culture. And you want to get a chance to get in there and be like, no. Like, it's very different than what you think it is.
Are you a witch?
I am.
What kind of witch?
I am a Celtic traditionalist.
Wow, that's very specific. Okay.
It is. It kind of, I think it generally falls into the boring type of witch.
A boring type of witch.
we're a little more nerdy.
We can't throw water on you and make you melt.
No, people have tried.
Wow. And you went to Harvard.
I did.
Which I'm not going to hold against you.
I know, you went to Yale, so I had to come to terms with this.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try not to get a sperm competition going here. Did you learn about immersive theater at Harvard?
You know what? It was coincidental. I was at Harvard. It was actually for my graduate program at Harvard. I was studying for art and education, and Punch Drunk Sleep No More opened with the American Repertory Theater in Brighton. And I just happened to go, and I was in the middle of grad school and this started, and I suddenly I had been a LARPer for years.
A LARPer. We should explain for our geriatric audience, of which we have many, that's live action role play. Right? Is that what it stands
yes.
for?
Yeah.
So, by the way, I have my Yale pillow here just to intimidate you a little bit.
I'm not
for God,
it's
for
Yale.
Country, and for Yale. You notice it doesn't say for God, for country, for Yale, and for Harvard.
See, I have my crimson hair going. So,
okay.
I've internalized.
Okay. You asked for it.
Oh, my God.
You don't have one of these.
No, she doesn't.
No. All right.
The editor of the game we're talking about tonight, Sharon, who's here with me.
Sharon.
Is he on? Is Sharon on right now?
Sharon, are you there?
Oh, there you are.
Oh,
he's cute.
Sharon,
nice.
Welcome to my bedside chat.
Thank you. I love having bedside chats.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's necessary in the corona apocalypse. You know, FDR had his fireside chats, and, you know, I would get too hot by the fire. So I'm here on...
I mean, you get hot by the bedside as well, I'm sure, just a different kind of hot.
Yeah, a different kind, yeah. And it's the kind that I enjoy more. So I'm
more tolerable kind of hot.
Sometimes. So I want to welcome you, and you are, we should get this whole school thing out of the way, a Dartmouth guy.
Yes, I am a Dartmouth guy. So
wow.
I'm slightly removed from this rivalry, and I will just smile and nod and be very amused by your banter.
Yes, good. That's entertainment. Right.
Well, instead of a rivalry, we could make it into a terrible joke, you know, a Yaley and a Harvard and a Dartmouth go to a bar, right? And I don't know.
I mean, I was there at the inaugural IVQ conferences, which was the Ivy League LGBTQ conferences, and I'm actually really proud of the inter-school cooperation we did to bring queer people more power and more interesting, like, education and stuff. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. All right. Go Bonobos. Yeah. So did you learn about immersive theater at Dartmouth or later?
I did a little bit, but I started doing more when I did my master's. I went to Tisch for my master's in interactive design. And that's where I really got into immersive, interactive, and other forms of embodied play or embodied storytelling. And I actually met Carly at a conference that brought together theater people and game design people, and immersive theater for many folks sits at this intersection. And that's when Carly and I started working together, which was a couple of years ago. We've actually known each other for years now, which is nice.
Yeah, it has been years. Oh my gosh.
Wow. So have you guys I guess no sex? Or
we've not had sex with each other.
Okay, I had to ask. Okay. Have you watched each other at all?
No.
Not as much. I think the invitation is open, and we understand if we are interested, we will ask each other. We are friends enough to be able to do that.
It's the ultimate form of theater. And, you know, I guess that when I was a theater major, one of the reasons I majored in theater at Yale, and we did have a theater major, theater studies, so it wasn't that glamorous, but was because it was really the only major where you could, like, kiss a classmate. You could interact kind of sexually, you know, doing your Shakespeare, right? What?
I've kissed a lot of classmates, just not in class.
Well, I wanted to do it in class. I was lazy, you know, I don't know. I wanted to get credit for it.
I wanted to get credit for it. That's the greatest pun. I wanted to get credit for it.
And
I focused on directing, so I got to tell people to do it. So.
Well, there you go. That's exciting, to be able to tell people. Now kiss. Okay, now's the time when you kiss. Okay, again, right?
I really enjoy telling people to kiss either me or others. It's a really fun evening.
Yeah, right. And you can do that in theater. You can do that, you know. Consent is still important, right? You know, but it's, you're more likely to get it. I don't know. Anyway.
I think that's the great thing about theater is that theater builds that space where, like, you can be very, very open and be like, this is cool, this is not cool. You can have these conversations because you're working in an environment of collaborative trust.
Yes.
And I think that's also why we have a reputation for being so kind of sexual and so open and freeing and kind of spiritual in it, is that that's what theater does. Theater creates environments where you take risks and you fail in front of each other every day. And you give each other permission to be open and flawed in yourself. And like, it's not that consent is free flowing, but consent is easier to express in an environment like that.
Very eloquent way of stating why I wanted to be a theater major to kiss in class. Yes, and you know, Harvard did some good things. You, Obama, you know. So, okay.
It has its merits.
I want to say, LARP and interactive theater has this concept that's often described in the literature as alibi, right? Where you can enter an interactive show or enter a LARP and try things you would not have social permission to do outside. And you were just talking about, you know, the cuckold fantasy, for example, right?
Yes.
Polyamory in general, right? And I personally know people who are in monogamous relationships, played in interactive theater or LARP shows where their characters had other romance, which started making them think about, wait a minute, I can envision my romantic relationships in a different way.
Right.
And the act of being in this embodied, playful narrative space allowed them to break free of the, you know, societal shackles, if you will, and explore that idea.
I like that. I like that explanation.
Very and it, profound.
It,
yeah.
It's a beautiful explanation, and it made me look at whatever you're wearing that is a little bit like shackles, right? Mm-hmm. What is this get-up?
I put the shackles on folks normally, but I am
harness?
Wearing a harness
suspenders,
today.
I think.
These are more than suspenders.
And then I wore it at a very impactful, very emotional LARP for 5 days. And my partner was like, you should just keep it. It's super emotional for you. And so now I wear it for special sex occasions like this.
Wow. Is it a harness?
Or it is a harness, yeah.
Yikes. Mm. So,
wow.
Oh, yeah. It matches, you know, your tie
sexy.
And the whole thing. It looks very sharp.
Yeah, you can wear it. I gave an academic lecture in it once. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's...
It's very much your executive harness.
Yeah. Very nice.
Someone called it the bondage business look, and I'm like...
Oh, bondage business look. I like that. I might have to steal that at some point. This is the bondage business look.
Definitely. And so that brings us to this production that you're doing called Please, or Pass the Sugar, Please. And it is kink positive, as you say. And so I was going to ask you, why did you choose kink as your theme? But obviously, because you're kinky. Yeah. So, but in this case, because you're not doing porn, I guess, or, you know, you're kind of expressing the kink through metaphor, through food in this case, although I guess it could be a lot of different metaphors that could be used, sort of like when you're a kid and you're trying to talk about sex to another kid and the adults are in the room and you want to talk in code. It's kind of a code, I guess, right? And we're going to play a little excerpt from one of these immersive theater experiences, but I'd like you to kind of, first of all, tell us how you got into this from real in the flesh immersive theater. Now you're doing online immersive theater, obviously, because it's the coronapocalypse and you know you gotta do something. And so that's one reason, but maybe there are other reasons. And yeah.
Well, I can say from Intramersive's perspective, like obviously like we were already collaborating with Sharon on a different piece right before Corona hit. And it was a live in-person show called Feast that was very sensory oriented, very focused around food, very much about like what food does for memory and how it plays in your mouth and how it plays with your senses, which was something we were really excited to do because we are known for our more historical pieces. And our historical pieces deal a lot with sexual politics and sexual identity, but it's kind of layered in all the economic and social and cultural history. So we wanted to do something contemporary and more explicit. And Feast was a great way to kind of start to bridge that gap. And we were, what, like 2 weeks out from Feast going up when everything shut down?
I had to buy my tickets, my train tickets, yeah.
Yeah, and wow. So we were like days away from, like, you know, days away from doing Feast. And
this was a production you were going to do in the house, in the big mansion with...
Well, we were doing it in the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem as part of the Daughters of Darkness Festival, which is this amazing festival that focuses on feminine identifying artisans that are interested in the dark arts, like taxidermy and, you know, kind of the more stuff that's not generally considered feminine. It's an amazing festival. So it was a part of that. And then everything shut down.
Wow.
And, you know, for us, like, again, our industry disappeared overnight. And for many of our artists that are all contractors, their industries disappeared overnight. And we were looking at, like, well, we can disappear until this is over. Or we can see if we can adapt and shift. And in that sense, too, is because, like, you know, we went through this, like, 4 or 5 weeks, so we weren't sure if actors who are independent contractors were even going to get unemployment. And I have people that I work with regularly that are amazing actors who both incomes in their house evaporated overnight.
Wow.
With
yeah.
nothing, with no warning. And
did they get checks? Like, no, did they get Trump cash?
Did they
least?
Get a stimulus check?
They have, but like that, this was back like right when everything happened and people were, you know, in an understandable panic state because they're not regular employees. Everybody's a contractor and shows are being canceled. Theaters are facing bankruptcy. Nobody knew it was going to happen. So I thought, I have this platform and there's got to be a way to make this work where we can put money in our artists' pockets and just keep them going as best we can. And so I turned to Sharon and I was like, well, we can't do Feast. Do you have any ideas? And he came and was like, oh, he's like, I got this amazing thought. And he came to us with Pass the Sugar and it was perfect. It was immediately ready to go. And I'll let him talk more about how Pass the Sugar came around, but I just want to say that like we've been delighted because it's helped us adapt to being an online company, which has had a lot of unforeseen benefits.
Yes.
Like, we've gotten to play with people from all over the country.
Wow.
We've introduced people to the world of BDSM, to the idea of being open about kink that would have never done this before. Like, the idea of showing up to a party or even looking for a party was, like, too overwhelming. But, like, this was so safe. They're in their house.
Yeah.
They could always just leave if they wanted to. You know, it was, they were not going to be in an uncomfortable situation that they have, like, we had this wonderful 19-year-old college student who knew nothing about BDSM play a game with a woman in New York and a woman in Miami who are, like, you know, back from, like, Studio 54 days, like, super awesome, like, old school matrons of BDSM culture. And through this game, like, they, like, she, this, like, 19-year-old girl, like, just opened up, and she was funny, and she was having a great time, and she was really confident. So, like, that's been really exciting to watch. But also, 75% of our ticket prices have gone directly to the artists and the writers. So we've been able to also put money for creative work back into the economy, which was our goal. And then we had all these other fringe benefits come from it.
All right. So that's fabulous. Has it improved your sex life?
Mm-hmm.
She says with her mouth full. Yeah.
She meant to do that.
Right.
I think in a time where you get cut off from people and you get cut off from new encounters and new relationships, like, you know, once a week, it's my job to log on and be a part either as a moderator or, you know, as a host, like, be a part of people getting together and having great laughs and good times.
Yes.
You know, alluding to wonderfully delightful, kinky and funny situations, like trying to explain, like, fire fetishes over scones.
Right. And we all know laughter is a mental orgasm, right?
And it's been great meeting and bonding with new people. But I'll let Sharon talk a little bit more about how the game came to be, because
Sharon,
yeah.
You're on.
I really liked what Koi was just saying, because that is part of the point of the game, right? So the game is written by a wonderful game designer named Cleo Yunsu Davis, who I've known for a few years. And it came about because a year and a half ago, the Effing Foundation for Sex Positivity awarded myself and my co-editor Lucian Khan a grant, and another grant the following year, but a grant to curate a collection of LARPs that were based on sex and sexuality.
Ooh.
And the aim was, some of the LARPs will discuss various aspects of sex and sexuality, and some of the LARPs will actually ask the players to perform sex acts on each other as part of the game, right?
Mm.
And so we all for entries. We got a bunch of different designs. Our aim was to both have a diversity of topics and also to have a diversity of artists, writers, and designers involved in the process. And I think we were pretty successful at that. And one of the games was Pass the Sugar Please by Cleo Yunsu Davis. And Cleo and I are both involved in the kink scene. And Cleo and I are both also interested in the idea of food and games. It's something we both worked on. And she came up with this game where the idea is all of you players have gone to a BDSM party, and the next day you are at a tea party, and you don't, because the party, everyone was masked, you don't know that everyone here was at the party, but you recognize the one person you hooked up with the most, and you'd like to communicate something you enjoyed about your experience with them, but you can't do so openly. You must do so by describing the food in front of you. Right. And we think it's lovely because, in addition to being a fun, funny game, it also exposes a lot of people, like Carly said, to BDSM who have never thought of this. It exposes people to the idea that BDSM is not a depraved or like a damaging sort of act, because as characters, when you're playing, you have handouts and things, and they tell you, like, tell your partner that you really enjoyed looking into their eyes last night and you really connected with them emotionally while they were beating you, right? So like, players are often like, wow, I didn't know kink had that. And I'm like, yes, kink is very much about emotional connection, probably much more so than, you know, impact and physical connection, right?
Mm.
So it does that. It also, and this is one of the artistic visions of the book, is it expands on where and when sex can be talked about, right? So games, the game world doesn't discuss sex in a very positive, good, open way, normally, a sex-positive way. And we wanted, through this grant, to pay artists to make games about sex to increase this visibility of sex in this game world, and to make people like the client, like Carly's customers and clients and participants who wouldn't know and or involve themselves in these kinds of things, to like open up and wow, we can talk about sex. Because, you know, Lucian and my idea is that talking about sex, A, makes sex better,
sure,
and B, everything better, because there's less shame, there's less stigma, which will also lead to more education, less sexual assault, all kinds of things trickling down, right? So the anthology is called Honey and Hot Wax, an anthology of erotic art game. It's coming out from Pelgrane Press this summer. I was super excited, and we decided, once Carly said, do you want to work on something else if we can't do Feast? I'm like, yes, Pass the Sugar, Please is very good because it is kinky, but you're talking about tea and scones the whole time, so it doesn't feel uncomfortable for someone new to it. And also, it's very, very playable over the internet. And so we thought it would be a great fit, and so far, it's been running really well, I think.
Yes, I've never heard scones talked about in such a sexy way.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought they were dry.
Well, you put a lot of, you know, butter.
Cream,
but they can be moist, okay.
Yeah, and then they get very moist. You have to kind of, you know, lubricate the scones.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we're about ready to play a little clip from Pass the Sugar, Please.
I would like to get the blueberry scone with the lemon curd.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, when you're biting into something like a blueberry scone, especially when they explain that the blueberry is very juicy, explosively juicy, like, I realize that is such a satisfying, like, bite and moment to have, but I actually would rather, I'd like to take that lemon curd, and like, you know how, I kind of have to work my way around the blueberries, possibly like eating the scone, dipping it in the lemon curd, getting a lot of different experiences out of it, avoiding the blueberries, maybe sectioning them off on the plate, and you know, maybe I have them, maybe I don't.
You want the blueberry scone, but you don't want the blueberries in it?
You know, sometimes it's about, like, you know, knowing what's there, but, like, not having it. Like, you know how, like, you can get a little bit of that blueberry flavor right around where the blueberries can taste?
I guess, right.
And, like, how delightful that goes with the lemon curd. Like, it's, like, you can kind of get all your flavors going, but,
you know, do you not like the blueberries?
No, I love blueberries, but sometimes the challenge is not having the blueberry. Sometimes it's more fun to see how much scone you can eat before you get a blueberry.
Like, I love a good, exciting scone. I love, like, a butterscotch scone sounds amazing. Sometimes it's a little too sweet, you know? Sometimes I don't want all that extra stuff in a scone. Sometimes I just want, you know, a plain scone, or a scone that I like instead of one that I'm just trying just to try.
I should feel free to just take the plain scone. That's totally fine.
Well, it's not necessarily that I need it. It's just sometimes I can't, you know, I don't feel like having an exciting one sometimes.
And we're back. Yes, wow, that was a little clip from Pass the Sugar, Please with Intramersive Theater. And we have members of Intramersive Theater here on the line. Carly Dwyer and Sharang Bizwas. Am I pronouncing your name right?
No, but no one does. It's totally fine.
Where's it from? Is it Indian?
My name is Sanskrit, so it's Indian.
Yes.
It's Sharang Biswas, but yeah.
Sharang Biswas.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, welcome back. And yes, sometimes the challenge is not having the blueberry, right? a little sensory deprivation.
Exactly. And the key thing about that is that the character I was playing is supposed to be oblivious. So he thinks everyone's just talking about tea and will ask a lot of, like, what do you mean you don't want blueberries? Don't you like blueberries? And the characters are like, I'm not talking about blueberries, yo. I'm talking about something completely different, but I can't say it out loud. And that it will create a really fun role play situation as well for people.
Yes. I mean, the metaphors are juicy. You know?
Carly, do you want to talk about the favorite scene that we had with the clotted cream and the waiters?
Oh my gosh. So one of our earliest games we were playing, in the dessert round, cream's in the scone round. We have one of the characters, so like the players all get sheets, and on them is like their character description, what their role is in their relationship, and kind of secret things they want to achieve to communicate each round. And our favorite, I'd say like my absolute favorite to be a part of in games, is when somebody picks, one of the choices is one of the characters would like their partner to organize a bukkake party for their birthday.
Wow.
And they have to convey that by talking about scones.
And well, they are the cream, I guess, yeah.
And honestly, it's one of my favorite things to listen to players navigate, because it's never been the same way twice. And there was one time, it was so funny, I think I almost fell out of my chair. One of our players was talking about how she wanted cream on her scone, but she wanted a lot of cream. And she was like, you know what? She's like, can you just get all the waiters? Like, can you get some more waiters come over here? And like, the host is like trying to like, is like miming that he's signaling waiters. And she's like, you know what? Anybody else who wants to just come and put clotted cream on my scone. And like, she was really just digging in. And it was like, everybody's laughing. Like, even the people who weren't quite sure what she was getting at, like the scene was just so over the top and funny. And I'm moderating, so I have my audio off, and I'm just like head down on the desk laughing. So she's like, just more waiters, more cream, more cream all over my skin.
So now these are happening live amongst the players. And then what happens? Do you post the recording anywhere?
So the recording we did for this show is specifically with the actors from our company who are hosts for the show. A lot of our online content we do record, but this one I feel like is to respect kind of people's personal spaces. We don't record this one traditionally.
Okay.
So when you guys asked us for a video, we're like, you know what? Let's get the hosts together. We know we have their consent. Like, we asked them specifically, this is going to be put out live. They were okay with it. So normally we don't, because we do realize that like for as many people we get in who are accustomed to BDSM and kink, we are getting just as many people who are not. And for them, this is a big, big movement. They're coming, you know, they email us all week being like, what if they're so nervous coming into it. And then they have such a fun time and they're flirting to a stranger. Because we know if people are playing in pairs, we never let them pair up together. So like they're flirting with a stranger, sometimes who's across the country, that they're only meeting in this one instance. And, you know, they're communicating these very deep, very personal, you know, needs and desires and likes to this person, and they're building a relationship. We have one of our players write back to us, and she was like, that was the first real connection I felt with a new person since quarantine started. She was like, that was the first time I felt like I was really connecting with people.
See, it is erotic theater therapy, I mean, to me. It's therapeutic anyway. I mean, maybe you need to talk to a therapist after you've been through one of these. But on the other hand, in and of itself, it's a therapeutic thing. It helps you to connect with people. It helps you to sort of work out your own feelings and fetishes and communicate in a way that isn't just blatant. So
A lot of players have reflected back to us that they didn't realize that BDSM required so much expressed consent and so much communication. And the idea that these relate, like it's, they're on board by knowing that these relationships are anonymous. So you are having these incredible
the game. The metaphor of the game is all about please communicate with each other, because if you just try and use metaphors and just try and say under the table, you're not going to get what you want. Please tell someone, I would like a bukkake, or please do not hit me as hard, but do spit out. You know, you have to say this. And that is what the game is communicating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Communication is important. You know, all these practices have been done since humans, since the dawn of humanity. And yet, I think we're making some headway in terms of the whole communication concept, how to communicate your feelings. People have been doing all this stuff forever, but not necessarily getting consent and understanding how to express themselves. And this helps with that. It is a form of therapy, education, which theater should be.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of consent is also very important. Like Carly just said, this isn't a show that our Intromersive commonly records, right? And one of the ideas is that this is a game which has sensitive content, but even other games or theater shows that may seem to us like it's not as sensitive, once it becomes interactive, it's important for us to implement mechanics where the audience can say, hey, I'm not comfortable in this anymore, I must withdraw, or something has just happened that isn't okay, can we stop what we're doing right now? And these are often termed safety mechanics or safe words, like in the S&M community.
Sure.
We make abundantly clear to our participants, we make them practice them, if something happens in the game that you are uncomfortable with, here are multiple ways you can stop this or communicate with the producer and the facilitator how you would rather not talk about this. And we start off at the beginning, just like you often do in S&M encounters, what do you not want me to talk about or do, right? We had one player, she was once like, hey, I'm only comfortable playing a submissive character. I would not want to play any of the others. And we're like, great, here's your submissive character, you know, things like that. Or like, we've had people be like, hey, I would prefer if we do not talk about age play at all in this. That is not something I'm comfortable with. We're like, great, we're not going to talk about that. So setting boundaries before and during play is important, both for this, like, you know, sexy sort of play, but also for interactive theater in general.
Yeah, and for life in general, you've got to be able to set these boundaries. Well, I always thought that, another thing I like about theater is it does kind of help you with life, you know? You shy people are often in theater, so that we can learn how to interact with people on stage, and then hopefully we can take that into real life. I mean, do you find that working with this helps you in your own sex life?
Yeah. I think absolutely. I think again, it's because again, like going back to the idea of theater, we rehearse. You know, nothing goes on stage that's not rehearsed. You know, like we practice, we play at it. We find better ways to say it. We find more interesting ways to say it. We get to talk about what is our intention reading. So when you get to play a game like this, like even if you are fully versed in kink and BDSM, you know what? There might be communication issues you are having with your partners, and sometimes like by just getting into a completely different mindset, working with a completely new different set of people, you get to practice communication and you get to practice expressing wants and expressing complicated needs.
Yeah.
And you get immediate feedback on that. Like it's, you know, like every now and again, like we'll have an odd number, so one of us has to jump in and play. And it's interesting to be like, oh, I'm really good at this. And then our partner isn't picking up on what we're putting down. And then we have to explore that and say, oh, but like, what am I doing that's not communicating this, since I can't talk about it directly? So I think in that way, it's because again, I think when you have a partner, especially a long-term partner, you can fall into communication patterns that can seem very hard to break.
Sure.
And you can oftentimes overanalyze like what it would mean to break those communication habits. Mm. So I think in that way, you know, aside from new people coming in and learning about BDSM is very much about communication and consent, but also for people who are, you know, also okay with that, it's a great place to kind of come back and do like a little checks and balances of like, if I want to communicate this, am I communicating it right? Like play with the idea, you can rehearse your communication in this kind of setting, and they're all strangers and it's all fun. Like it's all nothing sticks, nothing's permanent.
One thing I always tell my clients who want to tell a partner, maybe someone that they've been with a long time, but that that person doesn't know about their fetish for BDSM or cross-dressing or whatever it is, cuckolding. And I say, well, this is only one idea, but to sort of wake up groggy and say, I just had this dream that, you know, you were with another guy or that you were spanking me or whatever. And so because it was a dream, you can
that makes it okay.
Communicate it. And if they can't handle it, you can say, well, it was just a dream. So in your case, you could say, I did this amazing theater, immersive theater experience where somebody brought up, you know, tying up their partner. And I just thought it was really interesting. And maybe it'll be something that your partner goes, yeah, that does sound interesting. And then you can do it. Or maybe they'll go, oh, that's weird. And you go, oh, okay, well.
It was just an exercise in class. I couldn't control
not
it.
Not my
I
fault.
Mean.
Right.
And art can, even if you don't take this directly home, art can also just be a cathartic experience, right?
Yeah.
Someone can just get release through an experience like this. So a good example, one of the other pieces in the book, one of my pieces actually, is called The Echo of the Unsaid, right?
But be careful when you use the word release on this show. Go on. No, I'm just kidding.
And so my piece is called The Echo of the Unsaid, and in it, it's a two-player experience, and you play straight frat bros who keep having sex and then keep not talking about it and keep hanging out. You know, pointedly avoiding what they just did. And you play the game by actually performing sex act on the person you're playing with. You don't have to play with just dudes. It can be two people with vulvas, for example, who may or may not be dudes. As you play, you are playing straight frat boys, and you start by giving each other manual, so hand jobs. Then you progress in the middle of the game to give each other blowjobs, and then the end of the game you make out with each other, and the final scene of the game is you stare into each other's eyes for 3 minutes. And the game is about people not knowing who they are, and can they talk about it? Is this desire okay? A lot of things can happen, but when I play tested for the first time, I play tested it with a gentleman friend of mine, and he is bisexual, and he came out as bisexual while he was still monogamous with his wife, right? He is no longer monogamous with his wife because I was having sex with him.
Wow.
He told me that testing was really cathartic for him because he came out as bisexual while monogamous, and he felt he couldn't have like a release or like an actual coming out. Like he's like, I feel a lot of bisexual people have this issue where society doesn't view them as bisexual, right? Because they're in a monogamous relationship with someone. And so he told me that the experience of playing that was really cathartic for him. It felt like the coming out he never had. And I was like, my little old game did that for you? Whoa.
And what's the name of that game? What's the name of that game?
So that's within the anthology. So the game is called The Echo of the Unsaid. And it's in the same anthology, which is Honey and Hot Wax. So right next to Cleo's game, Pass the Sugar Please, for example. Yeah.
Okay, Honey and we like Hot Wax here.
Yep, it's Honey and Hot Wax, and it's coming out in summer from Pelgrane Press.
Nice. So let's see. So, do you feel like? I mean, these people don't have to be actors, right? They or are they mostly actors?
The only actor in the room is the host. Which is the person playing the kind of oblivious character.
Okay.
Everybody else is a player who we don't know, we never know them. We don't know them coming in.
Yeah.
But
and
I noticed they dress up for this like they're going to be in a play. I mean, but I guess you're dressing up like you're going to the theater, maybe. Like you're in the audience, but you're not in the audience. You break down the fourth wall.
Some people do. We've had people get they look amazing. We had one woman play from Miami, and like, oh my God, we all want to go hang out at her house. Like, she had curated her whole look. She had this like matching wine glass. She looked immaculate. She looked amazing. But we also have people who are doing this. Like, we have people kind of playing from closets because they're quarantining with their families and they want to play this kinky game, so they're in a closet like trying to play it quietly so they don't interrupt anybody.
Oh my god.
It's really about people like you can show up as you are And it's about your comfort, and it's about you entering into a space where you can play and you can be comfortable, and you don't feel like you have to, like, there's no gatekeeping to this. Just show up and play, show up and have fun, show up and talk about edging and a scone.
Edging.
You know?
That's when you don't let yourself eat the blueberry yet. Just hold on, you know.
Exactly.
So so now, do people do it in singles mainly, or couples, or truples?
We haven't had any truples yet. We've had couples. We've had a few couples play, which is actually really fun, because, again, we encourage them. We don't tell them what they have to do, but we encourage them to not play together. And they've always taken us up on that. We've
not
had,
be partners together, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We had one table, it was a birthday party. It was a birthday party of friends who would normally would have gotten together, and they couldn't. They came from multiple states.
I was there for that one.
You were there for that one.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get together. They usually get together from different states. So they decided to do this as their birthday party. And so the wife surprised her husband with this game. And they're, you know, very much in the BDSM scene. And so, like, all their friends got together online, and they played this game together. And they, it was again, they all knew each other. So it was really fun, because it was just, like, go for broke. But we play with a, you know, with couples, and again, they, lots of individuals call into play. And like I said, we, at a single table, we had one person from Texas, a person from Michigan, a person from Miami, a person from California, a person from Boston, and a person from DC.
And they pay to play?
Yep.
Wow. Can you say what they pay?
They pay $25.
A person?
A person.
And Carly's really good about, so every ticket sold, part of the money goes to the facilitator. Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's some of the actors from Carly's company. And part of the money every time is also going to Cleo Davis, who wrote the game, right? So I, as editor of the book, am not taking it because I did not write this game. The publisher of the book has told us, yeah, do this. I don't have the rights to this game. And so Carly's very good about, like, the aim of this. I mean, the aim of the getting the grant for the book partly was to uplift independent artists and creators who make a game like this might be a risk for them, because it's about sex, right? And like you were saying, society, don't always tell everyone, because society doesn't like this. One of our authors for the book has stayed anonymous and only goes by her first name in the book, right? And so part of the aim for the book itself was to pay people a fair amount for the market in games to do this. And Carly, her idea when she started doing digital stuff was, can we make digital experiences to support our actors? And so these two projects came together very well, and that even our labor practices or our grand vision for who is involved intersected about, like, pay artists a fair amount of money, because artists often get thrown under the bus in this. And it's actually, I was talking about this with the head of the Effing Foundation. Sex workers also often get thrown under the bus in the same way, right?
Uh-huh.
And this is an important thing to talk about, I think.
So, speaking of effing and effing yourself, how's your masturbation month going?
I have been jerking off a lot. I've been discovering the joys of erotic fan fiction recently.
Fiction. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's how
there
Fifty Shades
game
came up.
A book about masturbation, so.
Ah. You're doing a book about masturbation?
No. Some of the games in the collection, Honey Wax, are specifically about masturbation, so.
Oh, really? Well, give me a summary of one of the, a synopsis of one of the stories.
Sure. So there are a couple that are about masturbation. So the main one, Janaya Kemper, who is an academic and game designer currently at Carnegie Mellon, her game is called Feeding Lucy, where you play Dracula and Lucy facing each other. And the whole game, there's a lot going on, but the whole game essentially is about Dracula asking Lucy to do progressively more sexual things to themselves while watching them. And Lucy doesn't have to be a woman. Again, it can be any gender person. And so that game is explicitly about me telling you what to do to yourself so I can watch you.
Guided masturbation.
What was that?
It sounds like guided masturbation.
Exactly. With a vampire theme to it. And then there's a game that Lucian Khan, my co-editor, wrote, which is where you play as an explorer and the other person plays the landscape, and you are, like, touching bodies while describing alien landscapes. to that you're like layering stories and narratives onto your bodies, which at another level is really powerful because in society we layer narratives onto our body a lot, right? Whether it's I am fat or it's this is a male body, right? Like all these narratives get layered onto our bodies, right? So a couple of the games are about men. There's one game about teens at a summer camp at a sleepover just talking to each other about receiving the sex talk from their parents and how awkward it was, and that's the whole game. So it's not about having sex, it's about talking about sex. But a lot of the prompts are about like masturbation and, oh my God, my dad tried to tell me about jerking off and it was so embarrassing. And like, because I remember my masturbation, my dad was once like, I was like 15, he's like, have you wet the bed recently? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I haven't wet the bed since I was like 5 years old. And I didn't realize he was talking about wet dream. It was just, so like, you know, a game about that. So there are a lot of interesting explorations of masturbation and different kinds of sexuality in the collection.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, how's your masturbation month going, Carly?
Actually, I might have to pray about that for a second because my daughter just woke up looking so lost. Oh,
okay, yeah,
I thought
yeah.
she was talking to an imaginary
right.
person.
Okay,
I was
never mind.
Actually, I might be right back. I'll be right back.
Oh, okay, okay. We're going to wind
Obviously,
Sharon
likes to talk about masturbation, right?
Oh, I love it. I love talking about masturbation. In fact, I did so right
he
before the show.
He doesn't have any kids there.
A friend of mine, another game designer, professor friend, who I will not name, she sent me some erotic Witcher fan fiction that she thought was good. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a read. And I did. And then I jerked off. And it was super fun.
You know, immersive theater is everywhere these days. I mean, I kind of think of these protests that have been going on as a kind of
political
theater.
Right.
And it's, I mean, it can be very unsettling. It's not always something you approve of, but...
And you're immersed.
You're immersed.
Yeah,
I have no choice. I mean, I'm just wondering, immersive theater has been a very localized thing for a while. I mean, I used to do Commedia dell'arte, which is very... immersive. You bring audience members up on the stage, you go out into the audience, you play a character that's like yourself. I played Columbine. You know, you are always interacting with audience, but it's very local. I mean, somebody could make a video of it, but right. it's happening right there with the people in the flesh. So now we can't be in the flesh. I mean, unless we're, you know, we don't care and we just want to just maybe infect people. I mean, but most of us who are trying to be responsible and stay healthy and keep our loved ones healthy, we can't get together. So do you think this is going to get more popular? And my other question is, are people masturbating while they're doing this? I mean, you can't see below, you know. You don't
I
know.
I mean, if they are, they have the best poker faces.
I don't know. Some of them look awful happy even on the clip.
Anytime this question comes up, there's always this like you know, when we're talking about the internet, we're like, this will mean ebooks. Books will die. Books will not die, right? They have not died. So this idea of will it become popular? Yes, and I want Carly to speak about that. But will this kill traditional immersive theater? Absolutely not, because there's something to be said about the embodied presence of other people in a way that affects you differently from being in a virtual space.
Just like phone sex and webcam exactly. sex is not going to kill regular sex.
Exactly. It is a fun okay. thing unto itself and has its own affordances.
Yeah, and it's growing.
Exactly, but that doesn't mean live theaters or live interactive theater is going to die. But like, Carly, what do you think about the growth of the virtual stuff?
I mean, I think so. Like, I mean, I know from my own perspective that if you had asked me back in January, would you ever produce online content? I'd be like, oh my god, no, that seems like so much work. But now grocery shopping seems like so much work. So like, learning apps is not that big of a deal. But I think for those of us who have embraced the idea of pivoting, I know many, many like live artists and actors who understandably can't bring themselves to make the pivot because what we do is so much about sharing space with another human being.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong in that. But I think for those of us who have taken the pivot, we've realized that there's actually been a lot of silver linings to this. Like, for example, I would have never made this choice normally. But what we have found, again, is a great democratization of access. They don't have to come up to Salem. They don't have to, you know, our live shows are much more expensive because there's so much more overhead. So now they can kind of, in the safety of their own home, pay what we feel is a pretty reasonable fee to then pay our artists, and experience something that they might be nervous about immersive theater.
Yeah.
I know people who just won't talk to an actor in costume. They just won't. They're terrified. So they get to try it out. So there's a great democracy to that. But I think it's never going to replace the real, I'm not going to say real thing, because that's qualifying one is better than the other. It's never going to replace live theater, because, you know, there's so many other senses than just hearing and sight. And
yeah, well, I don't think it replaces it, but I do think that it's sort of like that principle of sensory deprivation. When one sense is deprived, you automatically almost, or eventually, enhance other senses. Mm-hmm. So now that mm-hmm. we're deprived of touch, and I mean, I'm a touch person. I feel touch is the most important sense, but we're deprived of it. So we have to enhance our other senses in order to enjoy life in a sensual way. And so here we are doing that with immersive theater, as well as many other immersive arts. And we're grateful for it. But yeah, we sure want to get back to hugging people in real life and being in real theaters and all of that. But in the meantime, here we are in the world of the theater of the mind.
I do think, to bring it back to the conversation about masturbation, what I think is an interesting opportunity coming out of this is that, because people who are, you know, quarantining alone versus people who are quarantining with partners, like, if you're quarantining with partners, you know, like, your masturbation month might be an exploration in co-masturbation, in, you know, different kinds of exploration. And since your sense of touch, you know, focuses again on four sensory receptors, right? It's like pain, hot, cold, pain, pressure. And every sense, every tactile sense you feel is a combination of those four things. I wonder if there is going to be a heightened personalized awareness to what that sensory reception is. So coming back out into the real world, I think we might have to readapt. We might have to recalibrate. Maybe people should be more sensitive to touch than they were before.
Well,
and that's an interesting avenue to explore. Coming into the world of being able to touch again.
Well, it has been a great experience immersing ourselves into your immersive theater, intramersive theater. So much fun that I barely noticed. We had another guest who couldn't make it, I guess. So we just have been talking to you and having a great time and learning so much. And yet we've got to go. So we hope to have you back. Maybe you'll have another show, what do you call it? Is it a show?
It's
a show. Okay. So another show where you can show us an excerpt and talk about what it means. And I'm thinking you're going to have another sexy show. And in the meantime, just good quarantine, stay safe, and stay sexy.
You too. This has been great. We've had a great time.
Awesome. Thank you, Intramersive Theater.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. We really enjoyed that. And yeah, we're almost out of time, but we're here in my bed. Actually, it's a couch, but, you know, a lot of people sleep on their couch, and certainly I have had some of my best sex on the couch. So couchside chat just doesn't sound the same. Mm. Bedside chat is what this has been, our eighth bedside chat on the subject tonight of immersive theater and the theater of the mind, including the erotic theater of the mind, which you can always explore with us on this show in Bonoboville. And if you want a very private experience with the Dr. Susan Block Institute, well, you do have to pay for that. And it's not too much, but, you know, we got to pay our therapist. What can I say? And, you know, for the roof, okay? So the number is 213-291-9497. And, if you're watching us on YouTube, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit subscribe, okay?
Subscribe, like and
subscribe, right? Punch that button. Press that sweet spot. Like it. Subscribe to it. both of our channels, Dr. Susan Block and our Sex Calls channel, okay? And Max, that was a fun show, right?
Yeah, that was
Intermersive
a great show.
Theater
was a great show.
And
yeah, yeah.
A cuckold call, very well spoken.
It reminded me, of course, when I was an actor.
Yes,
as
you were
young
an actor.
Man, you know.
At the Arlecchino Theater.
That's right.
It was one of our points of connection.
Right.
That we
right.
were both theater people and involved in Commedia.
L'Arlecchino.
Right. And you played
you
the
too.
Gendarme.
Huh?
I played Arlecchino sometime. I eventually settled into the part of Columbine because I am female.
I played the cops.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
The
well,
cops.
You're a cop.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was a gendarme.
Captain Max, you're right. Tall and upright. And
the review in the papers the next day was, you're certainly tall and handsome.
Oh, yes. You milked that handsome
but
line.
But he can't act.
Oh.
That's terrible.
Well, they'll let you do the intermersive theater, though. You don't have to be an actor.
I know. Right. It was all right.
Yeah.
I thought that was really a
good
review in a way.
Handsome is the most important one.
He was already pissed off because he couldn't have me.
Oh, yeah. You should do my move. You should...
Your move?
Yeah, stop.
Oh, right. Stop and keep going. That
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, keep yeah. with the compliments. Yeah, stop.
So, yeah. With
no,
this
that was
is,
fun.
This
that
is
was,
fun. This is fun.
That was fun.
And for a lot of people, it's interesting we had the cuckold call because for a lot of people, that's a form of theater. It's
and
like
non-offensive.
You're watching your lover with someone else.
Totally erotic
which
theater.
Is definitely a form of theater. And if you don't do it in real life, then, hey, it's the erotic theater of the mind, isn't it now? Yes, indeed. So how about where?
1 minute.
1 minute. Where's my people? I want everybody to, you know, okay, can
we're
you
all
put
here.
Masks on? Where's Anna
yeah.
and Miguel?
You're all here.
I love Miguel's mask, and I'll say goodbye to everyone.
Buy stuff. Buy stuff.
Put our masks back on.
Buy stuff.
Buy stuff. Well, I already talked about, you know, therapy, which
right.
is our most important stuff.
Right, okay.
You know, you can also donate when you watch this show, which
stuff.
Is free.
Consume now.
Consume, right. But you can also, of course, get the Bonobo Way. So Anna and Miguel, come on out here. Max, get your mask.
Mask.
I love Miguel's got this very snazzy mask now. And,
he's trying to be cool.
I, of course, have the... Yale Skull and Bones mask. And of course you did see, I just want to show it again, my Yale University thong.
Test.
Right. It's very
all right, we're out of time.
Mensa pussy.
Okay.
Whoa.
So, okay. So I
say goodnight. Say goodbye.
Oh, I thought we started late. but okay. So, can't get everybody together, but I will say thank you for joining us and follow the bonobo way. Make like bonobos, not baboons. Make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you.
All right, now we take pictures.
Talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination. My world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you. No fantasy is too taboo. And help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web.
with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else, you can talk with us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role play for you, and fantasize with you. And no fantasy is too taboo. And we help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. If you've never called before, don't be embarrassed. We all need help with sex at one time or another. Even world leaders do. Maybe especially world leaders do. But I'm not going to tell you which ones. So, when you need to ask a question, or play out a fantasy, or just talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else, call us at 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Block, and I've just written a new book called The Bonobo Way, inspired by my love for the Make Love, Not War great apes. You know, the ones who have a lot of sex in a bonobo sutra of positions, including face-to-face. But it's not just how bonobos have sex. It's how they use sex to prevent murder and war. Really. They're the only great apes that have never been seen killing each other. They practice what I call peace through pleasure. With the females gently dominating the very happy, very sexually satisfied males, bonobos are special, partly because they just are, and partly because they're very, very close to us, almost 99% genetically similar to us. When it comes to being human, even being humane, bonobos can teach us so much. Which brings me to us, and more specifically to you. Is your inner bonobo longing to swing free? Would you like to tap into the hot, natural sex energy within you? Bet you would. So you can better enjoy the pleasures in life and cope with the pain. You know, the pain. And have more orgasmic, organic, sustainable sex. Who doesn't want that? Greater lust, greater trust, and better anger management. And who couldn't use a little bit of that these days? So get the book, Learn the Bonobo Way. You'll be glad you did. Then you'll want to join Bonoboville, a new global village for bonobo lovers and friends. And one last thing. The real bonobos are highly endangered, so a portion of all book sales go to bonobo conservation groups working to save the wild bonobos from extinction. Read The Bonobo Way and learn why this could be the most important ecosexual movement of our times. And improve your love life.